Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. The end of the First World War in 1918, the Great War, heralded a marked shift in Western culture. Music, theater, visual art, and literature all changed, both in response to the war's carnage and as a way of deflecting its horror.
In the United States, the Jazz Age was about to begin. Women got the vote and their hair and hemlines shortened. By 1919, there were already more than 7 million cars registered. The country, especially New York City, was vibrating with optimism and hope. And it's at this particular historical moment that Richard Greenberg's play, The Violet Hour, is set.
The play's the final offering of the season for Renaissance Theater Works. Marty Goebel stars as the singer Jesse Brewster in the production, and Julie Swenson directs. They join me in the studio now, and Swenson says the company has been wanting to do The Violet Hour for years.
It has more people than we have done in the past. There is a pretty big set and a very interesting prop component that we weren't able to do financially for quite a while, and thrilled to finally be able to do it.
It takes place in 1919. And it's in a publisher's house, or sort of, in an office.
Right.
And there's this really interesting group of characters that kind of come and go. And as you said, there's this prop component that sort of arrives and somewhat creates chaos. Don't want to give too much away, because it's one of those plays where, you know, so much is revealed as it goes on that we sort of have to talk around it. Mm. But one of the characters, Marty, is Miss Brewster.
Yes, Jesse Brewster, who is loosely based on Josephine Baker. She's a famous jazz singer, and she makes some marvelous entrances, and her life is entangled with all of the other characters. It's been fantastic playing her. And I wanted to talk a bit just about 1919, which is a fantastic time to set a play. This was, you know, just after World War I, Manhattan was just crazy. And it was the one time where everything was really, really hopeful. And we have no idea, of course, that within 12 years, the stock market crash was going to happen. But what's important to me is that African Americans and Caucasian people were celebrating the end of this war together, and a lot of the racial issues of the day are kind of set aside for this gaiety that everybody is involved in. And of course, we're about to move into some good times in 1920s. The birth of jazz is happening, and the popularity of it. It's just a time of great invigoration.
Optimism, and
Manhattan is, New York is literally the center of the world at this point in time. And you feel that energy through these varied personalities, all very different people.
I found it interesting because you are the only African-American character. It's like the weight of all of that rests on your character. And there are some people in this group who are not quite so comfortable with the connections, with the celebration together.
Yes.
And that to me felt very real, because not everyone would be at that time.
Well, and Jessie, the character, she is very famous. She's very well known. And so she's allowed into a lot of, I think, circles that would not have been afforded to the average African-American of this day. Well, African-American, that was a term that wasn't even invented. There's all of these things that we are stumbling across in a historical manner. But yes, she is able to navigate and is indeed worshipped by the white population of the time because of her involvement with jazz and that popularity.
What was the term that was used then?
Negro.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Another word that was
colored.
Colored was the other. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And those were things that were considered acceptable.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And it really is helpful to really understand the place of these characters in the context of the, you know, the social climate of the time, and to remember that colored was a step forward from where we had been to be called that. And so there's a lot of things that Jesse's character does not take issue with, because no issue has been created in a present tense, if that makes sense.
Is that difficult as an actor? To kind of accept that that's where she is?
No, it's not difficult. In fact, it's refreshing. It removes a great deal of the burden of what my skin color was to me. Because again, this was a time of great explosion culturally, and I'm happy and I'm optimistic and I know where I've come from, which is, this is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It was such an amazing time. the end of the First World War, because the carnage of that war, it changed Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It utterly changed the art, the music, the writing, everything. And one of the characters that we haven't talked about, Dennis, is one of those writers that you know was changed mm-hmm. by all of that. And he's writing something that is probably Joycean, I imagine. That's, as I'm reading the script, I think of it as like nobody's seen anything like it before.
He's loosely based on F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Oh, is it Fitzgerald? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And maybe his girlfriend, Rosamund, is Zelda. I think there's some argument to be made either way. It's a composite of a lot of characters. Certainly could be Joyce.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking in terms of the writing and the volumes.
Right,
right.
Well, there are lots of lines about how he's going to change the way writing is. And there's an argument for a lot of different authors. Time-wise, F. Scott Fitzgerald makes a little
more sense yeah.
there. And their lives and how their relationship, F. Scott and Zelda's relationship, is mirrored in many ways in this play.
Yeah.
Right. And it's so much fun to see how the playwright has pulled all of these threads together. If you know anything about this time period at all, you're kind of going, is that who we're
right.
talking about?
Right,
Or what's happening? And there's this wonderful kind of time travel component, too. And we can't talk about it too much, but there's a lot of sort of looking at what we might become. You know, and it comes out of that optimism, I think, you're talking about, Marty, the idea that we could be anything.
Yes.
You know, and some of those things might or might not be so good.
Well, to me, this play is also about fate and choices. And is the future already in place and there's nothing we can do about it? Or our choices, do they change what the future looks like for us? And what choices do we make that do change and have ramifications for the future?
And it also, I really think, addresses that if our fate is predetermined, then why look towards the end of things if they may or may not become tragic? Because what you're missing is the moment, living in the moment and enjoying I love, there's a line in there that says essentially that we have to defer bleakness. And that's what gaiety is knowing that things may end in a bad way, but to live in the moment and enjoy what's happening right then. Because knowing your future may not be something you want to see.
I think most of us don't.
I do. I want to know. How many days do I have left?
I think you have to just assume you have none. And
yeah.
you go from there.
Yeah.
You know.
And again, encourages, then if this is the last day, you better have a good time.
Right.
Gidger. We haven't talked about Gidger.
Love Gidger.
What a great... Who's playing?
David Flores.
Oh, I bet he's having fun.
He's great.
He's having fun and we are having fun
yes.
watching him.
Yes.
Yes.
Gidger is sort of the... Well, he's not a servant. He's
an employee.
He's an employee right? of the publishing house.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of the person through which everything happens in
yes.
some way.
Yes, agree. He's the one that questions all of these decisions. He's kind of the deus ex machina of the play
mm-hmm.
and being able to move things in directions that he doesn't even know he's doing. And he's funny, funny, funny.
Yeah.
And David is doing a really great job.
He's hilarious.
Of bringing that energy.
One of the things we've kind of talked around is that the language
oh.
in the script and the overlapping dialogue and just the cleverness mm-hmm. of the writing,
mm-hmm.
of what you get to say. I'm envious.
Yeah.
Because it's delicious, delicious writing.
It's fantastic to speak. It has been, I think, a challenge for all of us as it relates to memorization, in that the sentence structure is very heightened and sort of like we speak now, but with, you know, that poetic flavor on top of it. And it just, you know, again, speaks to the time and how language was used and how people enjoyed speaking. And Gidger, of course, that character has the bull by the horns as it concerns rhythm of speech. Yes. He's hilarious. So,
right, and literary references.
Literary
and
references.
He's actually, he's the smartest person in the room.
He's very
not really acknowledged to be, but, yeah. but
which
is.
He points out.
Yeah,
which
yes,
he
many
tries
times
to remind people, but they don't always listen.
And he shares with John Pace Severing, who's played by Neil Brookshire, the burden of knowledge. And I really think the gem of the play is understanding that you may know things, but it doesn't mean that you have to share them.
Which is always hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want that burden.
No.
Well, it's going to be wonderful. I'm imagining the machine, the prop that we're talking about. I'm trying to imagine. I'm so looking forward to seeing how you do it.
You should be forward to the costumes. Woo!
Yeah,
they are beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah,
gorgeous costumes.
I yeah. bet.
Dresses made especially for Marty and Kara Johnston. And suffice it to say, there's a lot of paper on the stage.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A lot of paper. We are getting 13 boxes of paper delivered today.
Is that enough?
Well, we'll see. Exactly. We shall see.
And welcome to the publishing house.
Welcome to the publishing house, indeed. Well, it's going to be a wonderful end of your season. And I can't thank you both enough for coming in. Best of luck in tech.
Thank you.
Break a leg. And I look forward to seeing it on stage.
Thanks so much.
Julie Swenson is one of the co-founders of Renaissance Theater Works. She's also director of the company's season finale, The Violet Hour, which opens at the Broadway Theater Center Thursday evening. Marty Goble stars as Jesse Brewster. There is more information at WUWN.com.